Eternal Beta podcast for another week. This is episode 42. I'm your host Steve, aka Audio Cron, and as always, here with TB Dave. Welcome.
42. Wow.
42.
That's like a scale of value of 10 away from 420.
It's also the meaning of life.
I watched a Douglas Adams thing on YouTube the other week, and he was basically just saying he has to pick a number at random. He wanted it to be divisible by lots of different things, just to give people lots of different angles to go off. And after writing it down, he thought he may very well have made something here that might backfire on him, and it kind of has.
Right. So,
because every single nerd will just go up to you and say 42 all the time for things.
So it was a placeholder, and then he just never got around to actually using it.
No, it's a joke. It's just a joke. It's a funny book for funny people, yes.
Indeed. I was just thinking that was like probably one of the stronger intros we've done in a while. Last week was pretty terrible.
Before I tore it apart there with my dilute into Douglas Adams. Yep, sure.
No, that's part of the charm. So, yeah, how's your week, Dave? How did your Doscathlon event go?
Oh, what a busy boy I have been. So we did the Doscathlon as part of the Next Level Speedrunning Showcase over the weekend. There were five of us on stream there. I managed to come fourth out of fifth.
Wow.
Due to technical and brain issues.
Nice.
Sadly, I was like 8 minutes slower than the actual race time, so that was a bit frustrating. But
okay. So who came fifth then after you, and was it their brain issue or your brain issue?
No. I think Slabity Slab came fifth, and he didn't take part in the original race. He was a latecomer along to it, so I think he didn't necessarily spend as much time as I had practicing it. So, I think basically I came last out of all the runners from the race, which is where I was expecting to come. So that's that's understandable. Yeah.
Nice. It was a good time. Like, did you enjoy doing it?
It was rough. This particular one was stressful because so I noticed during Skyroads. So Skyroads is like an obstacle racing game sort of thing. You use arrow keys and spacebar. Towards the end of the set there, I hit the spacebar once and it didn't seem to register properly.
Right.
And I was a bit confused as to what was going on. The game after Skyroads is Mario Teaches Typing, and the spacebar just gave up entirely.
Gotcha. So it could have been a technical error on your end, like a hardware issue.
Well, it was. The spacebar literally wasn't working, and I just quickly ripped it out of the keyboard, reseated it without the metal slide on it, and that seemed to work.
So a keyboard pit stop. Nice one.
The problem is then, of course, like spacebars are quite wide, and if you don't have the metal slide on it to even out your input there, you really have to hit the spacebar right in the middle where the connector is.
The center, yeah.
Otherwise, it doesn't go down all the whole way. So my typing in a typing game was really slow and labored, and I had to double check all the time if I'd actually hit the spacebar or not.
Jeez. So you're like the...
So I was a bit thrown by that, yeah.
You're the Williams of the Doscathlon. Bit of an F1 reference there.
But it kind of just threw me, and it didn't help either that earlier on in Settlers 2, the run for Settlers 2, basically you don't build any economy in the town building game. You just go straight for the objective. So
gotcha.
You're very limited in how much flexibility you've got. And I forgot to build one of the buildings that I needed to build to upgrade my troops. So I think I lost about 3 minutes for that. So out of my 7 or 8, I was behind. 3 minutes of that was because of Settlers. I lost about a minute from typing because I had to restart the typing game. And otherwise, yeah, I think after I was just rattled at that point, and it was about 1 a.m. by that point, I think, by we get to the end of the race there, and I died a couple of times in Rebel Assault, and it didn't go great.
And what about the top three? What about the top three? How did they go in terms of, was there like a close competition?
Everyone was within about 52, 54 minutes or so that was pretty good.
Excellent.
They also had similar things, but I mean, it's there for, as a showcase for everyone as part of the American late night session. It's not a problem. I'm not entirely upset about it. You join, you have fun, and I'm there for the exposure and to try and be part of a community. So that's great. at the end of the day.
Awesome. Is it up online? Can we rewatch it, or was it a live stream?
It is. It is on Retro Gaming Live TV.
Cool.
They have all of the videos from the Next Level Speedrun Showcase there, so you can definitely hop on. It's not on my channel because I had to use their restreaming service, so I had to hook up to their RTMP server and stream directly to them. But it's all on their channel. The original Doscathlon is also on their channel, and I believe I have that as a highlight on mine. Not that it's that's useful because I'm not talking through it or anything. So.
So then you went then you went more into a romantic mode, and back to your roots and started to develop a love of chicken.
That's right, my hot and spicy roots. Yeah, my sweet and sour sauce roots. Yes. So as promised on last week's podcast, we did a live stream of I Love You, the Colonel Sanders dating game. It turns out that the Steam release dates, they're off by an hour in that they actually round down. So it says there's an hour to go. And I was like, cool, there's an hour to go. And then it goes 59 minutes to go. And I'm like, no, you said an hour like 2 hours ago. No. And but it came out at 10 p.m. our time.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a stream where I basically spoke through all the dialogue. I did silly voices for everyone. That took about 2 hours.
Did you get KFC delivered, though? Because I did see you were wearing a KFC bag on your head.
I did try and get a bucket like the Australian cricket supporters do, but they wouldn't give one to me. I had to buy one.
Right.
So I said bugger that for a joke. So I had my KFC paper bag hat on, and I had my KFC chip bucket with the moistened towelettes to mop my brow from sweating over Colonel Sanders.
Smart move.
Well, I needed it because he was a very dashing young man.
So how does this game play? Like, what do you actually do? Is it purely dialogue choices?
So it's a visual novel, and it is dialogue choices. You are going to a 3-day university cooking course, and over those 3 days, various things happen. You romantically fall in love with the colonel, and he wants to marry you.
Is he also a student, or is he the teacher?
He is the student. He's turned up there after starting a whole bunch of other things there, and the spirit of entrepreneurship is big in him. He wants to become a restaurant owner and run a successful chain of restaurants.
Gotcha. So that's early days colonel.
To please the world. It's a very young colonel, very buff colonel with his shirt popping off occasionally. The professor is Professor Dog.
Yeah, of course.
Who often requires treats. I mean, it's a Japanese themed game, and for a visual novel, it could have done a lot more silly things, a lot more complicated silly things.
Yeah, and kinky things like making the colonel your teacher, but we won't go there.
No, I mean, this is a PR effort, so we're not expecting too much here, but there's one translation joke, there's someone wearing a sheet pretending to be a ghost joke, there is... The tropes are all there. They're not expressed well, though. They're not expressed great. And there's actually, like, for a visual novel, for a dating sim kind of thing, normally there's multiple outcomes, multiple people. In this one, you always end up dating the colonel, and you even end up always in the same position that he loves you, but he wants to go off and start his restaurant chain, and then he'll return to you later on as a romantic interest, not as a business interest. You can't go and be a chef for him, damn it, because even though you gave him your coleslaw recipe.
So is there a way to lose the game?
So you can lose by doing bad things. So you can say, for example, you can turn your rival into a chicken.
Right.
And then when you refuse to turn her back into a human, the colonel will get upset, and then you get a game over screen.
Okay, so there's fail states along the way. You kind of get railroaded.
There are multiple different fail states, yeah. So you can you hit those, but there's only one critical path throughout the game.
Gotcha,
yeah.
Gotcha. And how long of a game are we talking?
Yeah, so I took 2 hours. That was me trying to talk through it all. You could probably do it a lot quicker if you wanted to, and there's no real need to do it quick, perhaps. I mean, if you've played ones, it's a visual novel essentially at the end of the day. It's not hugely exciting. It's a little bit silly. I said I was going to do two streams of it. I said I was going to do the one live stream in the evening as a good person, and then do one the following morning in American prime time as doing the evil sideline or doing the bad sideline. quest line, sorry, not sideline. But as I said, yeah, there's only one real critical path through the thing. And when I got to about 7 a.m. the following morning, there were 70 Twitch streams of it with less than 5 viewers. And there was probably about 140 Twitch streams of it all up.
Right. And how did you go with numbers?
So, no, I had about 3 people watching. And I think that was at least 2 of you or 3 of you at an Eternal Beta Land. So I didn't get anyone, and there was no desire at all to go and redo it again the following morning. So I let those 70 people try and meme stream it up to the kiddies.
Yeah. It was a good effort, though. I liked your dedication.
Well, sadly, most of the streams I saw, they didn't even bother to have props. And I mean, come on, guys, pick up your effort.
It's pretty important and easy to do. It's just a simple Uber Eats away, really.
Well, it was very simple from my point of view. It was literally just a bag on my head.
All right, and then you've got a couple more streams coming up this week.
So yeah, we've been trying to stream some Dark Souls 2, a proper game, not one of these retro bollocks games. I had a little bit of trouble today with the stream, but we'll try and get back onto that. So it's been a bit of fun. Got people coming in and engaging for that because it is an actual game.
Yep.
I want to do one more stream over the weekend as well too for the DOS Pirates as well. I'm going to actually try and do it on a hard difficulty and see how it goes in terms of fun. So that should be good. I won't be incredibly drunk like last time.
Well, you did well though. Like, that was a good Monday morning session.
Look, you said I didn't sound that drunk. I had to go back and rewatch it, and I was basically so sozzled I forgot to turn some of the overlays off when I realized I was far too drunk to stream, and then just mumbled my way through 5 minutes of trying to get to a save point with the Be Back Soon screen on. So I did well there.
That's fine. I just thought you went offline for a coffee break.
But yeah, essentially, yes.
Awesome.
And never returned. Not in bed crying, in pain, no.
Cool. Well, keep an eye out for TV Dave's streams this week. I had a few bashes. I didn't have much time this week, but had a quick go of Dead Cells. Have you heard of Dead Cells?
So yeah, so I've played a bit of Dead Cells. I'm interested to see how well you went.
Yeah, cool.
What did you like? What did you not like?
Well, it's not like I got that far. I only got like an hour in or so, and still working my way through it. I'm not a great like roguelike kind of player. I don't know like what's good, what's bad. Like, it takes me quite a while to get accustomed to how things work, even in a game like this. I think it looks amazing. I think it looks great. I love the art style. It's like a, you know, the metro. There's kind of a retro look, and while still being like bright and flashy and modern. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you can tell me like what you liked about it, and we can.
Yeah, the graphics are amazing, and it's a very strange mix between like a Metroidvania style game, and people like call it a side-scrolling Dark Souls. It's essentially very brutal in that way. And there's a lot of grinding and unlocking to do if you want to play the game to its fullest extent. Part of it is understanding what weapons you like and what works with your play style and learning new weapons and that sort of
thing. Yeah, so I was just picking up whatever I came across and just trying to like try them out, but I didn't feel like I was being met with much resistance in the time that I played anyway. So I imagine that ramps up pretty quickly though.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, the enemies, you'll notice they hit you pretty hard. Yeah, you probably went through all of your health. Your health flasks pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, you die like reasonably often, but every time you die, like, it restarts you back at the hub area, and then the levels like rebuilt when you go back in. Is that right?
Yeah, so like good roguelikes, it's entirely repeatable. So you start off,
but like still within the same game though, right? Like still within the same session, you're kind of running through it again, but with all the weapons you've got from all of the pickups you've got.
Kind of, yeah. So the game will give you unlocks as you go along. So as you unlock more things, you get a random weapon, and you get a random weapon and a random secondary weapon at the start of each time you play. It's that they're random based on what you've unlocked. You can also get money back from your previous life.
Yep.
Some money.
So you're not just starting over every time. Like in a way,
but you essentially are.
But you're just you're a little bit more powerful, a little bit more varied each run through, right?
More varied is the key, because you become powerful in the game by picking up scrolls, which can empower one of your three primary attributes. And so you basically base your build around whichever attribute you're trying to max. So there's red for brutality, which is close combat. There's green for ranged and skill level, shield skills and that sort of thing. And then there's purple for, I forget the name of purple, but that's sort of your traps and your technology sort of thing.
Yeah. And is it min-max kind of vibe, where you just want to pump everything into the one?
It's a little bit min-max, because your damage will scale off, your weapons will scale off whatever damage colors they've got. So you really want to get a lot of damage in. If you go away from the color that you're trying to get a lot of, you get more health. But again, like in Dark Souls, it's best just to not get hit.
Yeah. Cool.
And so what you'll do is you'll go through a couple of levels, you'll fight a boss, another couple of levels, another boss, and then another couple of levels, you'll fight the final boss, and then that will give you a boss soul. Then at that point, that is your next tier of difficulty. That is your new game, your Dark Souls new game kind of thing.
Yeah. How long would you say it takes to run through to get to one boss? Just wondering if...
To get to one boss the first time, maybe it took me a little while.
Yeah, I just thought that within, like, I don't know, maybe I only played half an hour or 45 minutes kind of thing. I felt like I was just kind of continuing to go through, like grind through this level, but like I wasn't sure where I was going to end up and how it was going to move on. So I definitely need to keep playing.
Yeah, I mean, there is lore in the game. There's not a story, but it's just mostly lore. And it's interesting to play through it, and it's not for everyone, I think. I mean, the grindy stuff is not for everyone, but play through it the first time, see if you can defeat the first boss and get one boss cell, and then see how you feel about it, yeah.
Yeah, so check it out. It's on Games Pass. When did it come out? Like last year? Dead Cells?
It was last year, and it came out to a nice fanfare, and they've been releasing more content for it now, so there is... when I played it, it was the same bosses and the same levels, and now there are more bosses and there are a couple more levels in it as well, I think, yeah. And a whole bunch more items. So they're still working on the product, which is really nice.
Yeah, it's been very highly rated, and that's why I wanted to check it out. So pretty cool game. Definitely check it out if you like 2D roguelite Metroidvania style games. The other thing I was into this week I went back to Headlander. So Headlander's a Double Fine Productions game published by Adult Swim.
Ah, right.
So it's got this, it's a 2D platformer with just a really weird, very strong 80s vibe, but a really weird conceit in that you are like a detached head, and you kind of plop yourself onto bodies or other items or mechanical things and control them. So you can also fly around as this head and attach yourself onto things and use it to get through to areas where you couldn't walk or, you know, due to gravity. So it's a really interesting conceit, right? It's so weird. It's got such a 70s sci-fi vibe. I think I said 80s before, but it's definitely 70s like kind of vibe to it. Very VHS-y. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the aesthetic is just really thick, which is cool. Again, another 2.5D type Metroidvania game. Really funny.
So I'm getting like a kind of a Scribblenauts vibe from the platforming, right? So you find whatever body or object that you need to possess to get over this next obstacle, and you go to it, you use it, and then you move on to the next puzzle,
that's
right?
That's it. But it's not really like puzzles so much because it's like a Metroidvania type of thing.
Platforming.
So you're constantly needing to kind of reapproach different areas of the game as you've leveled things up or gotten different skills or found some other type of like item, and you're coming back through another area. You've got different missions that you can be doing, side missions and stuff like that, to kind of flesh out like the main objectives. But yeah, you're kind of in this space station that's populated with a lot of people and security robots and all sorts of stuff. Interesting take being able to just latch on to any of those and use their abilities to do it. It's just a really funny game. So yeah, I mean, like all Double Fine games are really, but it just has a has, like, I mean, it's a few years old. It's like a 2016 game, but one of those. You should definitely check it out if you like that kind of description. I mean, just enjoying the vibe. Like, the lasers are so bright, and just everything about the sounds, soundtrack is really cool. Yeah, definitely worth checking out.
Nice, will do.
Yeah.
So the COD beat of the year was out there. Did you get involved?
I did.
I heard the shaders you had to download on top of everything else, which sounds very amusing.
Yeah, that actually didn't take very long. So the install I did overnight on the Friday. So the open beta happened on the back of the pre-orders guys beta. This is the second round. So the first round they only did PS4, we mentioned last week. This last weekend was for cross-platform. So you loaded it up and you got into the kind of main game screen, and then immediately you were like having to optimize and load shaders and just sitting there waiting. So it would have been nice to have known that or had that as part of the install process. I don't understand why it was separate, but jumped in, started off with the 6v6 kind of mode, and fast. It's what you'd expect. It looks okay. It's not super high fidelity kind of, I mean, not yet anyway. Maybe there's some layers to go on top there with the effects. I suppose this is more of a network test, but looks cool. You die really quickly. It's yep. fun. Like, as in, you're kind of laughing a lot because of just how ridiculously quickly everything happens. I had a few squad spawning issues, just generally, like, you know, just squad spawn deaths kind of just rampant. It's a bit weird. Like, even when launching at a base, like, you'd launch at a base, but it'd put you in a room and there'd be a dude just right there, like, behind you, like, not even giving you any sort of chance at all, just... And so, yeah, a lot of crazy deaths, but so I didn't really get into any sort of strategy. Like, they really are going for, especially with the ground war mode, which is definitely like the Battlefield clone, if you were ever going to get one from Call of Duty, this is it. So, you know, I think it was, I don't have the numbers, but I think it was 20 on 20 I was playing.
Which still doesn't sound like a lot, but I assume, I mean, yeah, given how COD normally works, it is quite a lot.
Yeah, so it was 20 versus 20 in the beta, but I think they're going for 100 plus, like 50 on 50 in the main game. So I don't know how that's going to go. Look, it was okay. So there's basic vehicle combat. The vehicles don't have a lot of control. They're very kind of arcadey. The whole vibe is just very, like, arcadey. Especially coming from playing so much Battlefield and kind of expecting a little bit of not simulation so much, but just like authenticity of the vehicles and the way they behave. This is a little bit more arcadey, but you can sit on the side of like a helicopter and be like a gunner sitting on the side and, you know, get kills that way if dudes can fly properly. But you are going to crash into something and die. There was a lot of just... yeah, your best bet was to find a window high up and be shooting down out of it. It was quite hard to be spotted in some places like that. So
you have the high ground audio, Cron.
But like, it kind of really favored that. So this big open map with a lot of building structures in it, and, you know, reasonably pretty looking map, but you spend most of your time running around indoors, so capping points. The coolest thing about the whole experiment though was that it was fully crossplay. So you'd go in your server and you'd look in the playlist and you'd have Xbox guys, PS4 guys, I'm not sure if they're any Switch, but I didn't think it was on Switch, but and PC, and then the integrated voice chat, so everyone can chat through it. There was mostly burps and goat sounds, but coming through between rounds, but so you know, you might think, okay, well, the console players are going to be a massive disadvantage with the keyboard and mouse play, and we talked about that a little bit last week, but
yeah,
they do have aim assist on console.
Oh wow,
so
okay,
you kind of you know, it's a little bit of an offset. You kind of got the, like, they can kind of pull towards you quicker if you've got shitty aim with the keyboard and mouse. So it's not like I did great. Kind of middle of the pack in a few games, near the end in a few others. Found Ground War quite hard to find people to kill without being killed in trying to find them. So once I kind of just started moving much more slowly and kind of not camping so much, but just finding like places to kind of make sure I had a lot of cover from, and then just wait for other dudes to run past and smash them. Unless, of course,
being careful. Gotcha. Yes.
Yeah, you would find that like people could kind of do a little bit of insane kind of like jumpy shoot kind of, yeah. I know they were just a bit good at it. It seemed a little bit crazy. I couldn't get to that level. Not that anyone would expect me to, but yeah, that's cool. I want to see that come to more games. I want to see crossplay in everything. Like if it can work for Call of Duty, I can't see why you wouldn't be wanting to do it in sport games, shooters, like anything else. I mean, Fortnite does it, sure. So yeah, hopefully that's a trend that we're kind of moving towards finally.
Well, long touted but never delivered, except for now, perhaps. Yes.
Yeah. There has been a bit of fallout since then, though. So they came along, good old Activision did, and dropped a bit of a bomb, no pun intended, and that was that they're going to have a mode, the Spec Ops Survival mode, which I think is kind of like a Horde mode, exclusive to PS4 for a year. So they're selling the same game at the same price on all platforms, except they're locking all platforms but one out of a mode for a year. What do you think about that, Dave?
Well, I mean, we hate things that lock out things for a year, right? We've established this in this podcast that I'm very much anti that sort of behavior, right?
Well, it's just that I think that if you are going to lock a mode out for a year, like, I mean, that's, you're talking about a yearly franchise. Doesn't that make it kind of redundant?
Well, I mean, it's not going to turn around within a year, right? I mean, people will still be playing this in 3-4 years' time, surely.
We'd hope, not with this backlash that it's receiving right now. So, I mean, just why not make it that a DLC, like, and sell it if you're going, like, what's the point of making it exclusive to one platform when it's a game that supports crossplay? Like, is anyone going to play that mode? Like, what's the benefit there of making PlayStation users go, "Woo, I've got a mode I can play," but then half their friends can't, or they're just generally...
Because it's entirely a commercial decision in the way these things always are. Like, this is a decision that's driven by sales.
You think that's going to generate more PlayStation sales of the game over the other versions? People are going to play on what console they have.
They think it will. That's why they're doing it.
Yeah, obviously. I don't know. I think it's a stupid move. But, like, why? Why are you blocking off a mode from two other platforms? Like, what, they didn't finish developing it for that platform? Like, it's the same code base that you'd be like pushing out to the different platforms. I just don't understand why you wouldn't support that on the others. Just doesn't make any sense, except for this whole commercial angle. Apparently they...
Well, and I mean, that's the only angle that makes sense, to be honest. And I mean, that's where we're at the moment. I mean, these are all commercial decisions.
Yeah.
And people don't realize, I mean, you know, we support these big AAA companies to do this all the time. And regardless of people whinging and complaining, this game will still sell lots of copies. This is not going to affect it in one iota. What will affect it is what platform you want to play it on. If you haven't already bought on one of these platforms, which everyone already has, of course.
I don't know if it's enough to sway you to buy it on that platform. I just, what I'm saying is, like, it just kind of kills that mode in a way. Like, if you're the only people who can play it, like, okay, maybe more than a third being PlayStation, but one of the three platforms that they're releasing on, then I don't know, it's just like, why even bother with it? I don't understand why you'd even bother making it. So one guy who was involved in the development of it came out, there was a second part to this whole story, and that is that originally said that there wasn't going to be any loot boxes in this game, which we all knew was bullshit, and then they
always going to happen.
And then they've come out and explained that, you know, because Black Ops 4 copped it pretty hard with the monetization model that they put in there. So, you know, they kind of, I suppose, PR style, classic Activision, trying to roll that back for this game. We're talking Infinity Ward when we say Activision, they're the publisher, but like, yeah, the guys making the game, obviously, are a studio within it. One of their employees has kind of come out and said that this was one of the best outcomes compared to some of the other things that they were suggesting they monetize it. So I don't know. Maybe we should feel happy about this monetization model as opposed to other potential monetization models.
Yeah, I mean, it always can be worse. I mean, it's whether it's locking content behind loot boxes or progression or, you know, paid DLC on day one, like your Stellaris kind of style games. You know, it all can get worse. Mm. And it just depends on how much marketing feels that people will pay for it at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Yeah, we wouldn't expect anything less from Activision. So, you know, what are you going to do? If you're going to buy this COD game, you're going to buy the COD game. But, like, this is their chance, I suppose, to refresh and set up for another 5 years of titles under this new engine and kind of bringing it cross-play and all that kind of stuff. I don't know why you'd want to kick off with Ill Will, but that's Activision for you. So you still got a month to get angry about that. It's not till October 25th release, so see how that plays out.
It'll be exciting to watch everyone on the internet melt down.
Yeah, I mean, they're raging pretty damn hard at the moment. People are cancelling pre-orders, big backlash, so... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say.
They're saying they're cancelling pre-orders.
They're saying, yeah, people are... Yeah, I mean, people who pre-ordered in the first place, which... So I'm not cancelling my pre-order because I didn't actually pre-order it and I won't be pre-ordering it. Yeah, anyway.
Look, in the same way that people get upset about Ooblets and people get so bad Epic, you know, they'll say they've cancelled it or whatever. And I mean, at the end of the day, they're probably going to buy the game if they're interested.
Yeah, that's it. Anyway, I mean, yeah, don't pre-order it. Wait it out. See how the reviews are. The Eternal Beta way.
So speaking of sales like that, sir, there was an important decision about Steam in France.
Oh my God, what is going on with this? Like we've kind of had a little debate about it in the Discord, but you might say we had some Discord over it. So the French Steam decision we're talking about now. Do you want to run through it first, what the decision actually was for the listeners? Or do we just want to debate what it should
right,
be?
Right, so...
I'm asking you that because I haven't actually
done... We've got to frame what we're talking about here. So there was a decision made under the EU's regulation that in a French court that Steam should offer the ability to resell games to people as part of the EU's push from people holding physical licenses of things, not just holding digital copies of things that can be revoked or otherwise terminated outside of the people who originally bought them's comprehension or ability to get recompense for. So this is an interesting ruling in that in the same way that I saw it in the same way that Australia got Steam to implement refunds, right, to the 2 hours refund yep. rule, and that went worldwide.
Yeah.
So I see this as interesting in that same way, and that if they're going to implement something for the EU, it'll probably roll out worldwide.
Exactly.
As well.
Before we go down that path, like, so the decision is it being appealed for a start, and we're talking about it just being relevant to France at the moment. However, the ruling kind of forces them to either change their policies or pay a fine. And, like, people are spitballing that essentially they'll just pay the fine indefinitely at something like a few thousand euros a month, right? So, you know, this may not come into fruition, obviously, with the appeal. So keep that in mind as we go into this debate. But let's do a thought experiment and talk about what if you were able to sell your digital licenses to games. Do you want to start, Dave?
So I mean, I consider this to be like in the old days. This my point of view of thinking is that this is like having a physical CD essentially, and that they want the idea behind this rule is to have it so that if you when you buy a game on Steam, you essentially have a CD that you can then on-sell. You have the right to on-sell. You have that license which is allocated to you, which is then your property to do with as you see fit. So I think this is a good thing. In that we sort of we just roll back sort of 15 years worth of Steam, 10, 15 years worth of Steam, and go back to a stage where if you wanted to sell a secondhand copy of a game which you're no longer interested in playing, then you can easily do that.
So you're wearing the consumer hat at the moment as well. You're talking about it from just generally, yeah, that makes sense, right? Like you buy some property, right. You get a copy, and you should be able to do with what you want.
And I mean, in theory, we all would have physical copies, of course, but we don't have physical copies. We have digital copies. And in the same way that people lose things, various bookstores going offline or audio music services going offline, heaven forbid if Steam ever goes offline, we'd be right in trouble. Luckily, we've got all the hackers who've hacked all the Steam apps to give us back our games. But still, it gives us as consumers back a little bit of control with what we've bought, because Steam tried to argue they offer a subscription service.
Yes. So their terms and conditions,
which the court threw out.
So their terms and conditions kind of basically license you a game for an indefinite period, but technically it's not like you're not buying the game. We've talked about this a number of times before. When you're buying a Steam game, you're buying access on their platform to that game. In lawyery words, so you don't actually own it as such, but as long as Steam exists and has a storefront and you can log in with your account, then you're able to access those games and offline for 30 days or so, I think it is, right? On if you go offline on Steam,
it depends if that game has a day one patch or not, of course. Yes.
You can turn off, you can go into Steam once you've installed a game, turn it into offline mode and play offline for 30 days before it needs to check in again before you can launch it. That's the starting point, is that, yeah, like what you're saying, we don't actually own the games at the moment, even though we're being sold licenses. The French court disagrees, and that's an interesting ruling there. I'm more thinking about it from the side of how this will affect developers who actually create games, particularly indie games. So think about the guy who spends, 3 years of development and creates a Jonathan Blow-style game and self-publishes, has to do all his own PR, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, we've seen quite the rise of the indie game in the last few years. Under this system, especially with shorter format games, games that don't have multiplayer components, just like single player kind of experiences, those games are going to get heavily hit in their sales figures. So people are going to buy the game. They're going to go, this game's great. You should buy it from me and not from the developer. So they, what might have been 1,000 sales, could turn into 50, but with still 1,000 people having experienced it. I mean, spitballing, right? At its extreme.
No, I mean, and this is a fair point, because that is a scenario which definitely has the possibility of happening. The arguments against that sort of thing are, you want to play the game on launch. You want to play the game when everyone else is playing it, when your friends are playing it, when you're talking about it, so you need to go and buy it yourself. Mm. Also, for smaller scale games, the cost of the game itself is going to be lower. So if you are then faced with a decision between, paying $5 for a secondhand copy or paying $12 for a full copy, I mean, that's not necessarily the end of the world.
There's no difference in those copies, though. They're digital copies, right? So they're literally the same.
But we are asking, like in the old days, we're asking the consumer to understand there is a difference here.
Yeah, I suppose.
And this kind of negates what Steam has been going on recently with its endless rolling sales every 6 months. And that endless rolling sales continuing updates, they continue to drive sales of their product.
Yeah, I mean, again, as a consumer, like, it's a win. Like, you're able to get something for an even lower price. I just think, you know, for a large developer, there's ways around that decrease in sales that you may experience, right? Say all of a sudden you lose half your sales, right, from this decision, just hypothetically. If you're a AAA developer, you can push your multiplayer components, you can push your microtransactions, your loot boxes, all that kind of stuff, and potentially like rework your game to have that online account system tied to the copy of the game. So the copy of the game becomes less important. Essentially kind of moving more to a free-to-play kind of model, because you've got the infrastructure and you've got the development time to support that ongoing. If you're an indie dev and you finally finish your game, it is done. 3.5 years of my time published. I'll sit back and drink a beer. And then all of a sudden, like, what you might have had your previous release, multiple years worth of sales ongoing and a building of like knowledge of your brand and your customer, your style of products rather, then all of a sudden that might turn into just a little spike at the beginning and your game just like disappears from having any sort of sales revenue ongoing over time. It's just going to go to the secondhand market. So I don't know. I feel like it could have a very negative effect for developers.
But people still have to buy it the first time to get onto the secondhand market, though. And I mean, it's not as if Steam has driven auteur-led development here. I mean, Steam has given an outlet for auteur-led development and has enabled the marketplace has enabled a lot of games, most of which probably should never have seen the light of day or should have stayed on Miniclip to be published and bought and sold.
This is true.
It's kind of a tough call to say that the sales figures will be affected like as in that way. It is a hypothetical, and we're talking about indie developers here who are doing it for the love of what they're doing, and not every game, for example, okay, not every game will be an Undertale. Lots of games won't be Undertales. Lots of games used to be sold on Miniclip or sold on other sites for a couple of bucks. I mean, mobile games still have this same thing. I mean, you sell your mobile game for a couple of dollars. That's used to be mostly auteur-led development. That's not anymore the case. But
so you just think that there'll be a bit an exodus?
To put forward that someone who spent 3 years' worth of their time onto a game is banking on the sales is probably a little bit unrealistic.
I don't know. I've seen quite a lot of stories like that. Anyway, again, hypothetical, but I suppose what you're suggesting is they'll just move off Steam and go to other platforms where smaller titles can be sold DRM-free or what have you, which might be good for Steam. Like, maybe it'll clean it up a little bit and get rid of some of that junk, because there's plenty on there that I don't know who's paying for.
The junk will still be there, but...
Yeah. So then you've got the idea of this whole marketplace, and like, how do they integrate that? Like, all of a sudden, when you go to buy a game, are you just presented with Amazon style or cheaper secondhand? And then, like, what's your decision making choice there? Like, do I pay $12 or do I pay $5? It's the same thing, you know, like button pressing meme. Like, you just yeah.
Well, Viola put up a good point about this in the chat, and that when In my scenario, when I'm paying for a secondhand game, I'm running the risk of scratched discs, damaged boxes, missing manuals, chewed inlays, that sort of thing. You know, there is a downside to a secondhand copy
in
that
the physical
way,
world.
In the same way, you have a downside to a secondhand record or a
CD.
But
not in the digital world.
Right. Everything is still as pristine as it was when the game came out. So there isn't actually a downside per se to buying a secondhand copy compared to a physical copy.
No, all you'd be doing is not buying a new copy where the revenue would go to the developer. You'd be paying someone who paid the developer previously. The consumer wins. I don't know where you stand on that, but I suppose if you're a developer, maybe you go, well, fuck this. I'm going to build my game where you need an online account to access your copy of the game. And through that online account, that's where most of the game kind of happens in terms of microtransactions or other revenue sources through those accounts. So if the base game gets sold on, no biggie, you've got a new customer and they may spend more money on your game.
Right, but I mean, this is not new to the games industry, though. I mean, there are whole segments of games that rely on this model. And the only types of games that don't are single-player games, as far as I'm aware, even though some of them still have microtransactions and things. They haven't yet migrated to a fully free client with an online account yet.
Yeah,
you know?
True. It might change your decision-making process as a developer, is all I'm saying. If that were to be the worldwide law it's applying to Steam in this case, but like it's not too far out of the equation to be just kind of generally thinking of how you sell digital licenses on. Interesting thought experiment just there, I thought, Dave, don't you?
It'll be interesting to see how it develops because, I mean, as you say, not only applies to Steam, but in theory would apply to Epic, to Ubisoft, to Uplay, to all of them.
Yeah.
In theory. And I mean, as long as we're talking, you know, digital licenses for software, I mean, we're talking about music stores as well too. I mean, your Apple TV, your iTunes,
yeah,
all of those sort of things. You're still buying a license for this product on this machine.
Yeah, so...
On this distributed machine service we're running.
So if Steam is going to, say they do go through with this, then they need to have a marketplace. There'd be a lot of effort required to do that, I imagine, to build that marketplace, to maintain it, to...
Well, they've already got the Steam marketplace, though. And, I mean, the question is then how do they integrate it inside the Steam marketplace? And that way... control everything, make sure their cuts are applied appropriately, make sure, because they already have access to all of your profiles, so they can understand whether it was bought on sale and whether they're selling it at a profit or not. Or
I just wonder if there's
other sort of weird scenarios.
I just
like
wonder
that.
If there's a way to put some of that transfer money back into the developer pocket as well. So, you know, say you want to resell your license, you can sell it for $8. Steam obviously takes a cut of any transaction. I can't see it just being an open marketplace completely. Maybe they give some small percentage of that each time back to the developer.
The developer's already been paid. I mean, I do not understand where the developer comes into this, to be honest.
I think it's core to it. I think it's absolutely core to the whole thing. Like, you're buying software products by software developers.
They've already been paid.
Like, they're the people that are creating the product that we're talking about here. So every single time that you take away a sale that is currently a sale to a developer, it hurts them.
So but it's the age-old question, isn't it? Why do they have so many sales on Steam? Because sales generate more sales for revenue. Mm-hmm. So, and it would, if you didn't have that product on sale, is that still then a sale? Would someone still buy it at full price or someone still buy it at half price?
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, so you're saying that there's a bit of an extreme rise and fall of prices in these drastic 75% off type of sales, which we're seeing less of over time.
Well, that's motivating sales. At the end of the day,
you mean
Steam
volume sales.
Pays out, what is it?
You'd get 70% of it. Steam takes 30% cut. Epic offering the better deal these days, and some other tricky little things to get people to sign up to them at around 11% of the total sale price. So, yeah, what you're suggesting is that, like, you start off with a $50 game and you try and get as many sales as you can that way. Then you drop it down, you go for volume, and you try and get a lot of sales at a lower price. And then somewhere in the middle is your average price that's paid over the lifetime of the first year of the game, right? What I'm suggesting is that those initial sales would go up maybe say the same amount in the first week you'd sell, and then after people have played your game, you are then no longer going to sell any games anymore because everything will be on the secondhand market. So you lose all ability to sell any more games after that, potentially. That's where I'm coming from.
Possibly. And I mean, luckily, I mean, it's not as if we had a scenario where secondhand games were sold in the past we could look at as examples.
But
for games.
That's where I'm saying, I'm not saying that's a good, that was like, I'm saying that's a bad time in our past in some ways. Like, yes, as a consumer, it's a very good way.
Games definitely made money in those times. So, I mean, games definitely made money.
But there was definitely less developers and therefore less games being made and less competition in the market and therefore less quality in the market. So the gaming industry as we grew up through was dominated by large corporate entities after the initial spike through the 80s and 90s, right? It very quickly got taken over by large corporations who funded development of games under their first party schemes before third party development kind of also cropped up and started making money. But you had to be a reasonably sized entity in order to create and profit from that. And then more so nowadays, the most money is made by the biggest products.
You mean like say Epic or Westwood, say, exactly. For example?
Yeah. So do you...
Yeah, Epic, that really large development studio that started off with Commander Keen 1. Yeah, that was a horribly large studio.
It started off that way. That's what I'm saying. It ramped up. I don't know if necessarily we want to go back to... Or if we can go back to that same environment. I question that.
Well, we'll have to wait and find out anyway.
Do you see it being... Do you think there'd be more opportunity for developers? I just think it'd be extremely limiting for developers to create games if that were the rule, because your profit margin would be cut into. So therefore, there'd be less people making less games and more big budget studios making games, therefore, like as in percentage. So they would make more money from it, right?
But I mean, this was the whole argument moving on to Steam, right? That as a consumer, we could pay less for games because there weren't any physical copies, there weren't any middlemen doing this. So therefore, the games could be cheaper to us. Yeah. And then volume-wise to a developer, they would get the same or indeed more income. Mm. And I mean, it's not as if the number of gamers in our society has gone down or has plateaued since the 90s, you know? Lots of people are playing games and lots of copies are being sold. The question is then, you know, can this AAA industry, given that we've just spoken before about COD, you know, I mean, can they actually go around and spend millions of dollars throwing money at streamers to navigate to promote their product when it'll already sell? Mm. I mean, this is kind of what they've budgeted into their product now, because they know it'll make a certain amount of money, so they will go and spend this amount on promotions. As an example, instead of, as we were talking about last week, you know, paying people appropriate amounts of money or planning ahead for crunch time. I'm kind of going off point here, but what this scenario of selling stuff secondhand has happened before. I mean, my Command & Conquer CDs have been almost all around the world, you know. Lots of people have played my own version of that game. Some of them went and then bought the versions of the game that were sequels, you know, based on their original experience of that game. Some of them may very well have bought their own copies for playing, for giving to their mates, to their friends, playing on LANs.
Like what happened with music, in the democratization of music, streaming... The proliferation of streaming services, all of a sudden you're not paying anywhere near as much for the product, but you may become a fan of something that you weren't before. And all of a sudden you go out and go, oh, I've got to get all their albums now. I might actually go and buy those for my own collection. But, you know, we have seen like the move away from physical media generally. So if this is going to dominate the game space, like you said before, no one's really going to own anything. We're all just going to be like paying for a short-term experience and then moving it on. And if we can get some of that money back.
Well, that's where we're at now. That's the scenario that we're at.
Except we can't sell it yet.
There's no way around that.
Yeah. Exactly. So once we're able to sell it again, you know, again, that just leads down the path of, are we going to end up in Games Pass world where games aren't even really for sale anymore. They're just featured on a platform and you need to subscribe to that platform to get access to it.
And that's a possibility, and that's why Microsoft and that's why all of our free-to-play game studios are trialing this sort of stuff, because they see it as a revenue model that needs to be developed for them, and for many of them it works. I mean, the whole world of XXX is entirely based around that. And by that, I mean place your own war-themed thing there, not place your own naughty word there.
Indeed. Well, that was a spirited debate. I quite enjoyed that. Let's move on.
So on to me continually bagging tech companies. So I saw a nice little story recently And that there was one particular Twitch streamer who was cosplaying as Chun-Li from Street
Classic.
Fighter.
Yeah.
Chun-Li, as you remember, has wears not a huge amount of clothing, has a small skirt, very long legs, some boots, top, whatever, mm-hmm. so on and so forth. The streamer herself says she got pants that were slightly bigger than what fit her because she realized that the pants on the hip side showed quite a fair bit. So she thought she was trying to go on the right side in terms of Twitch moderation there, but apparently it's at one point she crossed her legs and there was too much thigh showing and she got a suspension for
it. Yeah, I mean, this is ridiculous.
And this led me kind of down a rabbit hole where there are, this is not surprising many people out there, but there are vigilante mobs of people who go around and to target people they don't like and mass report them. And remember that all tech companies are there to make money. They're not there to provide customer service or to provide an environment there. They have algorithms for reporting and for moderating content. And if enough people go around and report something, like on Facebook or on Twitter or on Twitch, it will be automatically flagged and it goes down then to whatever scenario they have in place for dealing with that. If you as an individual report something that's not so great and you don't have a weight of 1,000 bots or angry young men behind you, you tend to not, your opinion is not as respected as this engineered one, say. So just a reminder, you know, it's these tech companies, they're not there for you. They're there
to can't trust
money.
The AI, that's the thing, to make these decisions. I think it's a bit ridiculous. I mean, like, it's a Japanese inspired garb. It's got a very high thigh cut. It's not like she's flashing everything. It's purely like a character from a video game. Like, there's worse forms of dress on female characters out there that could be looked at than Chun-Li's like outfit. So this is just absurd. That did they come back and say did they correct it? Is it purely just a bot thing?
I mean, it's a short-term ban, like everything. Most things on Twitch are short-term bans. It takes a lot of effort to get a long-term ban on Twitch.
But I imagine it would affect her ability to generate income through the platform being banned.
Well, it gives you a lot of free PR.
That's a good point.
Put it that way.
Could end up a positive.
As with most things, as with people who got caught doing otherwise, actually breaking laws or speeding or otherwise showing parts of their bodies on Twitch, you know, it gives you PR and then people go and watch you anyway. So there's not necessarily a downside for people who like attention-seeking in that way.
But that's not exactly what she was trying to do here by any means, right? Like, she's just wearing an outfit and crosses her legs.
She was aggressively crossing her legs.
So.
Yeah. Aggressively crossing her legs whilst wearing cosplay.
Yeah,
yeah.
Look, I just think that needs to be a little bit less drastic of a reaction from the AI banning bot there, if it in fact was AI and not someone getting nasty. Moving on in the news, Microsoft is testing their cloud gaming platform coming up in October. I believe it's just in the UK, and it's going to hit Android devices first. So this is their xCloud. So we talked a lot in the last year and a half while no one was listening to our podcast because we weren't podcasting, but we were on the Discord, about these streaming cloud platforms like Google Stadia and this Project xCloud, along with Sony's efforts, trying to move into this space and how that would play out. Interesting to see. So it's United States, UK, and South Korea is the kind of launch beta test. What do you think about fully streaming?
So when we say cloud service, what are we talking about here on your Android device? What are you
being able to stream AAA titles running on cloud hardware through to any device? So you could have your shitty Android phone, plug in a Bluetooth Xbox controller, connect to it, and be playing anything from their library. Running at full high settings, you know, like ultra settings, provided you've got the bandwidth, streamed down to your phone while you're on the bus. Interesting. Like, again, fighting games are out probably, and anything with any sort of latency. That was a big part of the Stadia tests, even in closed conditions, that people noticed the lag. It's quite obvious when you think about it, but does it rule it out as a type of service? Absolutely not.
We just have to increase the speed of light, like in Futurama.
Yeah, I just think that there's plenty of games that you'd be able to enjoy that way, like any sort of RPG, any sort of slower paced game that doesn't require Twitch skills. Could do that. Look, if it's an add-on offering to your Games Pass and you commute, like, you know, they haven't announced iOS support yet, but I imagine that's coming by the time they launch. They'd want to go onto as many devices as possible. I don't know how Apple would feel about it, but AAA games,
they want to take their cut
on a mobile phone or just remotely anywhere you want. Why not? 5G. You know, if it gets around, doesn't kill babies. I met someone the other day who was very concerned about 5G and their children, and hadn't thought about it from that perspective, but apparently that's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing amongst people who get very upset about things they don't understand.
Oh, I suppose you could talk about how much bandwidth you need. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's understandable. You need lots of bandwidth to stream high-definition games or stream games in any way, shape, or form, and upload as well for your controls.
Yeah, you need about 10 megabits down. Uploads, I imagine, would be small packets, just reasonably often, similar to how your Steam Link works in your house, but just across a network with more latency. So, yeah. Look, could work, could be the way. I mean, if Google and Microsoft are competing on that sort of service, there's bound to be a lot of optimization, but who knows? Who knows with that one? Definitely doesn't interest me in terms of looking forward to it by any means. Something I am looking forward to: Death Stranding.
Death Stranding. More videos.
So TGS was a couple of weeks ago, Tokyo Game Show, over in Japan, and Kojima-san did a full 50-minute live stream playing Death Stranding, his latest and greatest title, which no one knows what the hell is about or what the point of it is, but it looks really pretty and it has actors in it and all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, I haven't managed to... I think the whole point is he doesn't really want to tell everyone what the game is, like, to define it. And I don't even know if it really needs to be defined necessarily. Like, everyone's freaking out because they don't know what it's about, but they know, like, it's coming from Kojima, so it's going to be interesting... whatever it is. But do you feel, Dave, that you like need to know what it's about? Like, can a game just come out without needing to be put in a box about what it actually is and how it actually works and everything before day one? Like, can it just be an experience?
I mean, speaking from a marketing point of view, in order to get hype going about something, you need to actually understand what it is or get people excited about the concept of it. And he's entirely riding on his name, which is, yeah, probably fair enough. I mean, he can do that. He's one of very few people who can do that. And the question is whether or not it'll be successful or not. For example, Cyberpunk 2077, that's fairly self-explanatory by the title. You can imagine what that game would be like. It's a futuristic game based in cyberpunk in the near future. Fair enough. What does it do? Well, it's like The Witcher. Okay, cool. Like The Witcher. Great. I can understand that entirely. And Death Stranding, it's a Kojima-san game. Okay, good. What are we doing it? We're not quite sure yet. How does it play? Kind of. We've seen videos, of course, but yeah. So what were the videos like? So they've put through there'll be some sort of asynchronous online, sort of like Dark Souls-y kind of ghost style.
Yeah, look,
going
the best
on.
I can gather is that do you remember Journey, PS title, where you couldn't talk, but you ran around this desert kind of, and other players were there, and the only way you could communicate was little beepy noises. That you could make, but it required like kind of a cooperation between the players, even though there was no like system really to do that, to people to guide you through. And it was a very interesting type of mechanic. I think that's kind of a component of this game, is the idea of like either leaving items or like finding items that infer that something previously in the past happened, and then you need to kind of figure out what that thing being there meant, and potentially even leaving items at other places for the other players that will come along later and play the game. I'm not sure what that all means really, but like it seems like he's trying to explain. I didn't watch the entire thing, but it seems like he's trying to explain this system, that it's about like goodwill, like it's about trying to not be competitive with other players so much as assisting other players. So it's very unique in that sense.
Sounds ambitious.
Yeah. I mean, no. Exactly.
Which is what we want.
Like I kind of like the fact that it doesn't really fit in a box, and he's not kind of coming out and trying to describe every single mechanic within the game before it's launched. And he's more about, here's a title. I want you to experience it, and I want everyone to kind of experience it together. And like, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a different approach than what we're used to in the West, as usual from Kojima-san. So, yeah, that it kind of got me more interested in it.
So you're saying it's a game that'll have a lot of sales up front and not sell a lot of secondhand copies?
Potentially,
you're saying.
But you know, being online, I suppose that requires you to, not requires you, but motivates you to play it ongoing and therefore not sell your copy, because you need it to keep playing in future. That's that. There was plenty of other stuff at TGS. Had a brief look over everything. Didn't really have much to talk about on everything else. Shenmue 3 did interest me, but I kind of got cut off while I was watching that video, so don't really have much to say about that yet. But I think that's going to be an Epic Store exclusive, Dave. So it could be my first Epic Store purchase.
Exciting.
Or I might just wait till the exclusivity's over and pick it up on GOG or something like that.
You could pick up a secondhand copy on Steam.
Well, I can't because it's not on Steam. It's exclusive to Epic.
Well, it will be eventually, right? There'll be 1 year exclusive and then it'll go everything.
Well, like we talked about last week, or maybe the week before, where Steam updated their policy where if you don't release it on Steam within a few months, then you can't come on Steam at all. So maybe it'll fall into that category.
I misunderstood that. Excellent. Okay, right. That makes more sense. Gotcha.
At least that's what we think that means from Steam. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if it was only for games that had said they were going to launch on Steam, but then decide that they're going to launch somewhere else. Like, you're allowed to launch exclusively on another platform, but you have to bring your game to Steam within a certain amount of time. So, like, they're saying, if you want to use us, then your exclusivity somewhere else has to be reasonably short term. Yeah, so TGS, I'll definitely check out some more of that. If anything else interesting there rears its head, I'll bring that up next week. Destiny 2, the preloading has begun for the move to Steam. So as we've mentioned numerous times before, it's now free for the base game on Steam. So hoping to bring in a large number of new players. Massive update to the core systems of the game at the same time, which means that regardless of whether you had it installed and all the expansions installed on Blizzard.net, you have to reinstall on Steam entirely. Luckily, everyone's kind of done with content for the moment, so you could easily just wipe it off your computer for a week and start your Steam download.
Some people need to do that over the whole week.
I've downloaded 5 gig so far last night. Another 80 or so to go. I think you need even more than that space on your hard drive. So if you've got 120 gig SSD, I don't think you're going to fit. I think they've got to put all the assets in there because you'll be playing with people with all of the assets from the expansions anyway. So they'd have to load all those textures and things and assets into the game. So make sure you get about that. You've still got a week to do your transfer. I wouldn't leave it though. It only takes about a minute to do transfer if you need to move your account. Next up was Battlefield 5. It's just having a rough time at the moment. It's just struggling, really. Their September release for their Metro style map still hasn't reared its head yet. Their 4.6 patch as well, still no date on it or what's going to be in it. They mentioned a few fixes in their social streams, but haven't actually written anything down for us yet. So the other part of their update that was planned for this month was to have private servers, so people could make their own hardcore modes. There's no hardcore mode in BF5, which is, you know, a staple of past Battlefields, so you can kind of make roll your own in a private server, but they've kind of gone quiet on that as well. So just, I don't know what's happening there. They're just, I'm backing away from it, I suppose. That's requiring a lot of effort, and I can't see it. It's just been a mismanaged project, that one. You didn't touch it,
did you? A AAA studio mismanaging a project? That would never happen. What are you talking about?
Well, it seems to happen quite a lot this year. Anthem is the other one. Other big name title that's kind of done that. They just announced that they are essentially just ditching their roadmap. So everything they planned to put into the game. Again, rocky launch. Anthem being your Iron Man, your BioWare created Iron Man-y type superhero-esque, massively multiplayer Destiny 2 competitor.
No, it's you don't need to, because that's nailed it, and it's something that had hilarious. The project wasn't led very well, and just had random executives come in and say, "Oh, today I want flying. Today I want to do this. Today I want to do that. Today we're using a new engine." And there are lots of good articles out there to read up about how Anthem was developed crazily and by utterly insane people.
Yeah.
And that's how it got to where it is today.
7 years worth of development or so ended up in this mess. So yeah, they ditched their roadmap. They've announced that they're just going to go to a slower cadence, a slower release of updates, seasonal updates, they called it. Which essentially, I think, just means they're like, yeah, we're kind of done with this. We're going to have to rework a whole bunch of systems. So we're just going to go back to the drawing board for a bit of it. I don't think it's the death knell of it, but I do think that they're kind of just being like, meh, I think we're going to like skip on this for a little while instead of focusing their efforts on it. Makes sense, though.
Well, also, creating new things costs money. And if they haven't got money from sales, which by the sounds of it, they definitely didn't, you know, then having to hire less people to develop new content is going to slow down everything.
Indeed. Dave, there's a new Overwatch hero.
Yeah, so onto our multiplayer shooter stuff. So Sigma has come out on the Overwatch scene. He's a tanky, shieldy kind of guy. And we'd have to get Mike or Orangi to get on here and tell us a bit more about how it's impacting the meta. But I've heard, but it just basically, it's a shield tank character that counters snipers. And the snipers that I've read about online talking about Sigma aren't very happy at all. So yet another OP tank that really puts a feather in Blizzard's balancing cap.
Yeah, I mean, snipers being upset, like, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of people that are exclusively snipers. I think they ruin a lot of games with their campy snipiness. I'm a bit biased though.
We'll have to get one of our resident experts on to explain the meta to us noobs.
Yeah. Similarly with Apex Legends, a new character coming for season 3, which kicks off on October 1st as well. New character is called Crypto. I've kind of just completely dropped off Apex Legends. I don't know if any of our clan are really still into it these days, are they?
It's just a blur, isn't it, right? I mean, Apex blurs into Fortnite, blurs into just a big blur of colour and memes, yeah?
Yeah, pretty much. That doesn't have much of a backstory, apparently. And, yeah, I mean, if you're into it, you probably know about it. We'll move on.
Come tell us about it.
Yeah, come tell us about it. We're always looking for new guests to come on the show, so if you're sick of hearing just me and Dave waffle on all the time, make yourself available. Come onto our Discord. Come and chat with us. We'd love to have new opinions and new angles on things, especially if you've got like other devices that we don't talk about and want to bring, you know, kind of your opinions to that. We're a gaming community and we want to represent that to our listeners. I suppose while we're on the updates to games, there's some more Battlefront 2 content coming, so they've really been smashing it with Star Wars Battlefront 2. I'm not sure about the server populations, but had a bit more of a go of it late last after the last episode recording anyway, last weekend. And yeah, look, it's still fun. They got a new planet coming in an update, as well as a co-op PvE mode, so I think that's up to 4 players co-op online versus computer, so Be looking forward to trying that out. All right, and lastly, Red Dead Redemption 2. So, as we know, no PC release for the title yet, and we have a lot of PC players in our community, mostly PC-based in our Discord. So, just completely missing out other than emulating or attempting to emulate Red Dead 1. Apparently, past classification in Australia was what we think is Red Dead Redemption 2 PC. Being that it's like already out on the other platforms and there's now an entry in the database there from, what are they called?
The Office and Film and Literature Classification.
The very one. Rumors are abound that there's an imminent announcement of launch of Red Dead Redemption 2 on PC. This is typical of Rockstar, and Take-Two double dipping, triple dipping with their, like, spreading out their releases. Yeah, I don't know. I've already got it on Xbox One X. I will temper expectations a little bit. The game is, like, it looks fantastic. It's great for the vibe of that world, but it isn't the most fun way to spend some time. It's quite slow. There's a lot of realism in terms of your character's interactions with the world, opening every drawer, being animated, like all these things that kind of just add up to you being like, I better go over here and check that one as well. And it's quite kind of slow to the point where you just really start to feel a little bit like you could be doing something else that's more exciting.
You mean looting everyone's drawers for cups and tins and things is really slow and dumb and you shouldn't do
just
it?
Just everything in the game is like that, though. I'm using that as an example, obviously. But yeah, that it's
sure.
It's not that that particularly is the thing that is annoying. It's just, yeah, compared to Red Dead 1, where I just remember it maybe with rose-tinted glasses a little bit, but it just having like a drive to it. You know, there was a tension to it, and with you running away, or rather chasing down your ex-gang, this being the story of that gang, it just doesn't have the same, kind of energy about it. It's got quite a slower, more morose kind of down-tempo vibe to it. So anyway, still, there'd be plenty of optimizations for PC, you'd hope, and could be a great looking title and a great playing title. So let's see how that goes. Exciting news nonetheless. We'll wrap it up there for the week. You can reach us at Eternal Beta Pod on Twitter, eternalbetapodcast@gmail.com. Let us know if you've been having any issues with our podcast subscription feed. I've noticed a couple of different platforms are struggling with the feed, maybe because we took such a long break and they haven't updated or they think we're done. So I've been doing my best to get it out there. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on, I think you can find us on Pocket Casts now by searching on Pocket Casts, which is now also free. A very cool app. So definitely check that out if you don't have a Pocket Cast app. Or you can head to the website and grab the feed there. Thanks, as always, TV Dave.
Thank you very much for having me and for putting up with me.
And next week we'll be post the Destiny 2 launch. So look forward to having Jeff, if not Susanna as well, back on, and anyone else who's interested to talk about some Destiny 2 launch and all the gaming news for the week. Catch you then.
All right, bye.